Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
The final hour of the Rob Brown Show goes now. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Fan Upstate. I am Rob Brown, the great Lonzo on the ones and twos this AM. Be a part of the radio program, 844-FANFONE, 844-326-3663. That, my dear friends, is how you jump on the Renewal by Interstate of the Carolinas fan phone, 844-FANFONE. You can text us at 71307. 71307. Start your text with FAN, F-A-N, FAN, F-A-N, and we will read them on the air. You can tweet me at the Rob Brown Show. You can tweet the great one Lonzo at Lonzo on Word, W-O-R-D. And you can tweet everybody up in here at The Fan Upstate. There's all the different ways to get in touch with the radio broadcast. We'd love to have you. Plus, don't forget, join us on the live stream, facebook.com/TheFanUpstate, The Fan Upstate on YouTube, or The Rob Brown Show on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. We broadcast to all of those destinations all day, all show, every weekday. That's what I was going for. All right. Got some stuff I want to get to.
Glad you worked that out.
Yeah, I was spinning it in the noggin pretty hard there for a second. I'm like, we can get there. Might need a second, but we can get there. All right, Greg McElroy was on ESPN yesterday and was talking a little bit about how the college football playoffs could shake up. Most importantly, he brought up a very interesting scenario that could create. So you heard what Greg had to say there. If this, that, and the other all line up, you could have eight teams all in a tie to move on to the SEC championship game. And because of the teams that they are and the records that they hold, it would require the Southeastern Conference to go to the fourth tiebreaker. The fourth tiebreaker would be win percentage of all opponents. If that was to shake up, 9-3 LSU would go to the SEC title game. Now, there's two different things there that I find interesting. Number one, if 9-3 LSU was to go to the SEC championship game against Alabama, which would be the other team that if it shook out this way, and LSU was to win the SEC, a three-loss LSU team would likely end up behind a couple of smaller 0 or 1 loss conference champions, meaning that in year one of the Southeastern Conference's, what I am affectionately referring to as the SEC Big Ten Invitational, in year number one of the 12-team playoff, a 3-loss SEC champion, but the SEC champion nonetheless, wouldn't get a bye. They would have to play in round one. Not only have to play in round one, but there is a possibility out there that the SEC champ would have to play on the road in round one of the 12-team playoffs. As a fan of chaos, I'm all in. I love chaos in college football. It's entertaining as hell. I love chaos in college football. But aside from the chaos, isn't this a reason that the major conferences, the Big Ten, the ACC, the Big 12, and the SEC, isn't this a reason they should go back to divisions? Like, I know you've got big divisions now, but even if you do it NFL style, and instead of having divisions, you do it pod style, right? If you're a 16 team, you have four team pods. You play everybody from the pod. You play everybody from a different pod. And then you have one rivalry game that rotates no matter what pod you're in, right? Like, there's the pod system feels like it would be perfect. You combine the pod system with what Lane Kiffin said in the clip we played for you earlier in the clip, or earlier in the show, pardon me. Lane Kiffin said, look, you know what the transfer portal is? It's free agency. Remember when I've said, and some of you guys got mad at me, that whether you like it or not, that college football is money first. It's profit first. It always has been. It's just now it's at the surface, shining and crystal clear.
I got to ask you about the pod thing real quick. So does that mean you add an extra game? So there'd be a semifinal game in order to win the SEC?
So that obviously would have to be that way, right? You would take the highest ranked pod winner against the lowest ranked pod winner, and then the two and the three pod winners. And I think the answer might be yes if that was the case. But here's my thought. Do the SEC and Big Ten semifinals not draw immense amount of viewership?
Well, absolutely.
That's it.
But that's one more game.
I agree. I think it is evidenced by the fact that we just went from a 4 to a 12-team playoff. And not only have we gone 4 to 12, but I've already called the shot. We're going to 16.
Well, then the bye is not really the bye. Because if you play a semifinal game, you win, then you win the championship, then you get a bye. But then you're still playing the same amount that the people.
I got news for you.
Yeah.
I got news for you. When we go to 16, there won't be a bye in the playoffs either. There won't be a bye in the playoffs. The reward will simply be that the top 8 teams host the first round game. There's your prize. If you're 1 through 8, you host a first round game. Again, all of this is what I've been talking about for some time now. College football is profit driven first. And if they think they can make a larger profit, they're going to do the thing, and they'll figure out the justification for it later. The NFL whirls with divisions because it's the best way to create interesting, compelling, dramatic storylines down the stretch. Is the AFC North not a compelling storyline right now? Right? I mean, if we look at what the AFC North is and what it has been so far this year, I have got in the AFC North, a Baltimore team that was expected to be a heavy Super Bowl favorite out of the AFC. They're second in that division. I got a Steelers team that all y'all said, uh-oh, they're cooked, they're done. And I said, wait till Russell Wilson's in there. I'm telling you. Wait till Russell Wilson's out of Denver, and my dog is cooking. Just knocked off the Commanders
this
weekend.
They were already winning with Justin Fields in there. It isn't like the miraculous thing happened when Russell Wilson came in. So they were already a story before that.
They were already a story. Now their offensive numbers are skyrocketing to the top of the league. Now they're doing it with offense. Either way, the Bengals. Yeah, they're 4-6. Yeah, they just lost. But do the Bengals... This is going to be something that a lot of you are going to scoff at. Stick with me. Do the Bengals not feel like the most dangerous 4-6 team of all time? Do the Bengals not feel like they'll have to be damn near perfect to do it? But do they not feel like a 4-6 team that is still in contention for a spot? The point is, the reason the NFL rolls with a divisional model isn't because that's the way they've always done it. The reason they roll with a divisional model is because divisional models create drama down the stretch. Divisional models are a wonderful way to manufacture drama because at the end of the day, most of us watch football because we love good football. All of us watch football because we love drama. Good football frequently is good football because of the drama that is behind it. We love the Detroit Lions because the drama that Dan Campbell brings to the table just by being Dan Campbell. the AFC North is interesting, not just because of the drama between these teams, but because all of these teams have some level of drama within them, right? The Ravens have drama. They lost to the damn Cleveland Browns. That's dramatic. The Steelers have drama at the quarterback position. Absolutely, it's dramatic. The Chiefs, they're 9-0. Should be a boring football team to watch, but they're not. Because it's like every win, every slight win, every not covering the spread win is somehow more of a dramatic win than the week before, and it's been dramatic dating back to week freaking one. It's a dramatic model. We watch because of drama. When we watch, they get paid. I absolutely think these major conferences are going to a pod model, or as we call it in the NFL, a divisional model. I think at some point, and I don't know what the numbers shape up like, right? Because the Big Ten's got 18 teams in it. How do you split that up? 2 9-team divisions? And you play 6 of the teams in your division and 3 from the opposite? Maybe you play only teams in your division, right? Like, I think we're going back to it. And I think the reason we're going back to it is because it will manufacture more drama. And even if you got to add one more game because we got a 4-pod system and now there's a pod semifinal or a divisional semifinal and then the conference championship game, even if we go back to that, the reason we would go is it's one more very meaningful game. Because even if you are only playing for the SEC championship, because everybody that wins a pod is likely going to be at most a 2-loss team, even if that shapes up that way, playing to host in the first round is a big deal. It's a big boost to your chances, right? So it makes more money. It gives us another dramatic game to put on TV, and you can still utilize it in a way that rewards teams that are going to the playoffs. It's real simple. At the end of the day, and I've been banging this drum for a long time, the college game is money first. And in listening to what McElroy just said, and again, I am team chaos, but if you end up in a spot where the Southeastern Conference has an 8-way tie, you thought it was bad when a team got left out of the 14 playoff? Imagine what it's going to look like when 6 Southeastern Conference teams feel like they truly got left out of the SEC championship game. A championship game that for all but probably one of them, a W would result in a first round bye in the college football playoffs. You don't think there's going to be some drama connected to that? Now, that drama is interesting. It's entertaining, but I can't televise that, right? I can't televise Ole Miss fans being all upset that they got left out when LSU got to go play. I can't televise that Georgia's all upset that Bama got to go play. I can't televise the sadness, as McElroy pointed out, of Texas fans who were inside of the top 5 all season long, but got left out of the SEC championship game because their strength of schedule, which they had a minimal hand in setting and zero hand in setting in terms of conference strength of schedule. I can't televise sad Texas fans because Texas, despite being inside the top 5 in the SEC and the top 5 of the national rankings all year long, got left out of the SEC title game despite the fact that they had the same record as the same record as the teams that got to go. I'm all for the chaos, but I can't televise that. What I can televise is if we had 4 pod winners and we had a semifinal and we had a conference final, and the conference final, the winner got a bye almost automatically. I can televise that. And if I can televise that, I can monetize that. And at the end of the day, ain't that the plan? Ain't that the game? Ain't that the way it works? Yes. So don't be shocked if we end up in a pod system as a direct result of what happened this year. All right, just some food for thought. Hey, Make sure you go to the Odyssey app, A-U-D-A-C-Y. Put it on all your digital devices. Go to the Fan Upstate page. Click the little heart icon. So every time you open the Odyssey app, it brings you right to our station. And when you get there, go to the little microphone button. Click it. Leave it that 30-second to 60-second voice message on the Ray Memorial Hotline. Because if you do, and you leave me the best voice message of the day, you might hear your voice message played the next day on the Odyssey Blitz, our I'm struggling right now, our Armada Audio of the AM. We will play it during the Audio Blitz every day. Go to the Odyssey app, leave it on the Ray Memorial Hotline on the Fan Upstate page, and see if you can get your voice on the show. We are back after this on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show continues. It's the Fan Upstate. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Your college football playoff rankings came out last night. We've gone over them a handful of times. Thanks to Denton Day from SiriusXM for joining back in the 7 o'clock hour. If you missed that, the audio podcast will be posted shortly after the show comes to its incredible conclusion here in about 36 and a half minutes. From right now, you can go back and listen to that interview with Denton Day by going to thefanupstate.com and going to the podcast section or following the Rob Brown Show, wherever you get your podcast. Oregon 1, backed up by Ohio State, Texas, Penn State through 4, Indiana number 5, BYU number 6. Then you go Tennessee, Notre Dame, Miami, and Alabama round out the top 10. Ole Miss is 11, preceding Georgia, Boise State, SMU, and the Colt through 15. 16 is Kansas State. Colorado jumps up to number 17. Washington State, Louisville are 18 and 19. And number 20, the Clemson Tigers at number 21. The South Carolina Gamecocks. Oh boy, howdy. The Palmetto Bowl looking progressively more interesting on the national scene. LSU was 22. Mizzou, Army, and Tulane round out the top 25. So now that the college football playoff committee rankings have dropped for this week, what are some of the talking points? Well, we'll start with this one, as we have mentioned a couple of times. Three of the top four spots are all owned by the Big Ten. Four of the top five spots are owned by the Big Ten. Now, there are obviously some things that have to shake out. Two of those teams, Indiana and The Ohio State University, still have a contest to play here in just a couple of weeks from now. And that is going to be a big one for the Hoosiers and the Buckeyes. Here's my question, Lonzo. If Indiana wins that football contest, which is a long shot, I think you guys are going to be favored by probably, I'd say today, 8.5. If Indiana wins that contest, they jump Penn State, right? They jump into, I would say they jump Penn State and they jump Texas, right?
Well, they would have to because at least jump Penn State because of head-to-head Ohio State. Whether you think transitive works or not, Ohio State beat Penn State and then you beat Ohio State, which means you beat Penn State.
I think the transitive property of football is dangerous when you're diagnosing games, when you're breaking down games, when you're wagering on games, when you're analyzing games, when you're talking about games on professional radio. I think the transitive property of football is dangerous. I also think the transitive property of football is absolutely utilized when ranking these teams. I think it's absolutely a factor.
X, B, Y, 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 and Z. It's being human, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And on top of that, again, when you're putting these rankings together, when you're the playoff selection committee and you're trying to stack them up 1 through 25, I also think, especially when you get into some of the more distanced rankings, that there's only X amount of factors you can lean on, right? What do you do if you have two teams that only have maybe one crossover common opponent, right? I have to use that as a factor.
Well, there's other things that haven't been decided yet. I don't remember this late in the college football season so many things being undecided. We don't know for sure who's playing for the SEC. We don't know who's playing for the Big Ten. it's kind of exciting because, you know, the champions are getting in. And there are some people who lose, some teams that lose may not make it at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, the Oregon Ducks still have a couple of interesting games on there. They've got to go to Camp Randall to take on Wisconsin. Now, that's not a Wisconsin team that's going to be in any way, shape, or form favored to beat the Oregon Ducks. But Camp Randall's a tough place to play, and that's all the 5-4 Badgers have left.
I think Oregon is probably the safest team out of them all.
I would agree with that entirely.
Because they can lose the Big Ten championship, and they're still going to be in.
I would agree with that entirely. I'll go one step further. I think a 2-loss Ohio State team is in. Now, the problem is you got two games left on the schedule that are interesting. Indiana, a team that can beat you.
If they lose to Indiana, yes. If they lose to Michigan, no.
I think the other aspect of that is, listen, if you lose to Indiana, you're not going to the Big Ten championship game. If you beat Indiana, you probably are, right? So I think that's got a lot to do with it. But I think if this team was to finish 10-2, there's an outside possibility that you get in mainly out of, and by the way, I was reading earlier, and I don't remember who wrote it, but I was reading this thing.
Your branding thing will come into play.
Yes. Yes, that is exactly correct. A 10-2 Big Ten team, like a 10-2 SEC team, will get in if they can justify squeezing them into number 12. This is what I talked about. What happens if, let's say, theoretically, let's say Colorado. No, let's not say Colorado. Let's say Colorado. Let's say Colorado runs a table. They get to 10-2. Let's say they go to the Big 12 championship game. But let's say they lose it by a point in a great contest. And they end up hanging out around 12. Do you think that a 10-2 Colorado team, well, I guess 10-3 technically, is getting in ahead of a 10-3 Big Ten or SEC team? Not a damn chance.
I think the bigger thing would be like a 10-2 Ohio State and a 10-2 Alabama. We've had that situation before in the 14 playoff. If they're both vying for 12, who do you go with? Because then the branding goes out the window.
It's equaled out, right? It's equaled out. Not that it goes out the window. It's just that it's equaled out. Now, let me give you another one, Zoe. What if there's a 10-2 Ohio State? Or let's say you're 8-1. Let's say you lose one. Let's say you lose to Indiana. Indiana moves on. Let's say you finish the year 10-2, and you're hanging around 12. What do I do with a 10-2 Buckeye team? What do I do with a 10-2 Buckeye team that has a loss to a top 3 team and a loss to a top 5 team and wins over 0 ranked teams? None. What do I do if I stack you up next to, let's say, I don't know, a 9-3 South Carolina team that has 5 ranked wins?
They have beat ranked teams. Penn State, dude.
Oh, that's right. You have one over the Buckeyes.
I mean,
okay. That's fair. It's fair. I'm good for the argument. What do I do with a 10-2 Buckeye team who does not play for a conference championship, vying for that 12 spot, if I have a 9-3 South Carolina team that's also somewhere in that ranking order, somewhere in that mix? But they have wins over, will we decide they have wins over 5 ranked teams if they went out? Or 6 ranked teams? If I recall, I think it's 6. I think half their schedule's top 25 teams. If they go 9-3, does South Carolina, with the schedule they had, arguably the most difficult in the country, if they go 9-3 and you go 10-2, and you are both vying for the 12 spot, would South Carolina deserve the nod over the Buckeyes at that point?
They probably would deserve it, but I don't think they'd get it because of the third loss. Because I think then the third loss does come into play.
But see,
because some three-loss teams are not the same as other three-loss teams.
I agree, but let me ask you this question. If that is the case, and the third loss matters that much, then why does one more loss matter? Because last year it didn't. Last year having one loss didn't matter more, did it? You see what I'm saying? This is why I was upset about last year. But here's the part where
everybody— These things are a year-by-year basis.
Ah!
And this is also a brand-new thing. This is 12 teams. It's not the 4-team thing. That's history. That's, you know, so last year, there's 12.
See, this is what I'm talking about is, and I'm not saying this about Lonzo, although he is playing into it, and I appreciate it for the sake of the segment. Hashtag for the brand. This is why I said what I said last year, that a precedent was being set. And you can say, oh, well, last year's last year, and this year, and it's a new year. And you are right. It is. It is a different format in a new year. It's the same playoff selection committee that is supposed to be using the same criteria that they used last year to determine who's 12 and 13 as they did last year, who's 4 and who's 5. And last year, having one more loss didn't matter, right? That's what we all agreed on last year. Having one more loss didn't matter last year. And you can run to all the justifications that you want to run to about quarterbacks and defense and offensive efficiency rankings and strength of schedule, and that's all well and good. But for whatever justification you want to use, it was decided last year that one more loss doesn't matter if we just believe in your team more. And so my thought would be, in this hypothetical situation we've created, if USC, if South Carolina was to be fighting for 12-13 with a 9-3 record and not playing for an SEC championship game, and if a team out of the Big Ten, Ohio State, or pick your poison, was 10-2, one less loss, and without, because this is why I've pointed out, the Big Ten is top heavy again. You have Indiana, Oregon, Ohio State, Penn State. There ain't a threat after that. There's just not. Everybody else is bad. So if I go out of the SEC, that while the Big Ten has more in the top five, the SEC owns the top 25. And South Carolina has wins over six ranked teams. Six. Then shouldn't I be able to say, one loss more doesn't matter because it didn't last year, so it shouldn't this year, and therefore South Carolina should be able to get in. And this kind of also goes back to what I was saying about my complaint about Heather Dinich's take earlier. Explain to me why a three-loss Georgia team should be able to get in at 12, but not a three-loss South Carolina team who had an objectively more difficult schedule to navigate. It doesn't make sense. This is all I've been asking for. Make it make sense to me. All right, we wrap up the show after this on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Damn right I'm walking the Vans, Wesley.
Put those things down. Mister, I don't like feet, but you flashed your feet at least three times today.
I didn't flash my feet. I flashed my shoes because I got dope kicks. Fresh kicks.
You flashed your feet.
No, I didn't flash my shoes.
Yeah, okay.
There's no point. You saw my feet. You saw my shoes. Not my feet. My feet are inside my shoes. These are my shoes. And my dope shoes, my fresh shoes, that match the kit top to bottom.
I don't know if I say dope vibe. Shoes. That sounds like something totally different.
No. Dope is good. All right? It's like radical from back in your day.
No. I was going to say it makes it sound like you paid for them by selling dope.
No, it doesn't. Dope just means cool, Gramps. Come on, man.
I've taught you this.
Excuse me,
old man. I don't even know that they use dope anymore to describe things.
Oh, it's back, baby. We done circled all the way back around. Bell bottoms and dope.
What's this wee stuff?
The kids, the society, public.
And you're one of them?
Damn right. I still got it, bud. I still got it. I'm still hip. speaking of
that, you are daddy-o.
You know, we talk about food on this show. It's an important part of my life. It's an important part of your life. It's actually one of the most important parts of everybody's life.
Yeah, I think we all kind of need it.
Yeah, got to have it. Our buddy Michael Stathakis pointed out at one point that the reason food comes up regularly on just about everybody's radio show is because we like to talk about things that we connect over, right? Whether it's our football team, whether it's music that we like, whatever. And there are very few universal experiences. Food is one of them. So when I come across a good food take, like a good food take, I got to share it. I think all of us, and all of us, I mean America, love Matthew McConaughey. How can you not love Matthew McConaughey? He's just a dude that's got his own vibe. Just does it the Matthew McConaughey every time. He's the best, all right? Well, Matthew McConaughey was on a podcast called Two Bears, One Cave. It is hosted by a couple of comedians. One of them is Bert Kreischer. The other one is Tom Segura. Two guys I very much like. And again, they are they're grown-up comedians. They're not for everybody. But podcast is pretty funny. Yeah, it used to be. It's kind of fallen off a little bit. But they get big guests. Matthew McConaughey was one of them. And they asked Matthew McConaughey one of the most important questions that you can ask another human being if you want to get to know them better. Thank you, Matthew McConaughey. Thank you for helping me make America a better place. Thank you for helping me make America make steak great again. All right? Everything he just said is spot on. Number one, if you can afford it, get you a porcelain. Get you a big green egg. Put that thing at $4.55 and let it sit. Now, this is the part that everybody gets wrong, and I don't care what you're cooking it on. Barbecue grill, smoker, big green egg, porcelain, whatever you're using. You've got to trust the equipment to do the job, all right? If you can get that grill working and you can get it to the right temperature and you can open that SOB, sit that steak down, and then drop it back down, okay? You do that, you got to keep it closed. You got to let that heat surround the steak. It's got to cook it from every angle, all right? Now, if you can't, and you got to cook it stovetop, number one, absolutely, he's right. You go with the big skillet, preferably the cast iron, all right? You get yourself a good cast iron. Now, if you're going to go cast iron, and I advise you to, I'm a big cast iron guy. I got like 5 different cast iron pots and pans I use. Big cast iron guy. But if you're going to do cast iron, and you should, you got to learn how to season that cast iron. Do not wash the cast iron every time you cook it, all right? What you do? You rinse it out very quickly just to get the big chunks out. Then you take that cast iron, you sit it on the stovetop, you get it all the way up to maximum volume. You take your oil, you put it in there, you let it sit, and then you scrub it around a little bit. Then once you got that oil in there, you want to take some salt, some thick coarse salt, drop in there, and you want to use that sand to coat that cast iron. You want to rub that salt. You want to sand with that salt. All right, you want to get that real grit in there. Then you go back with the oil. The sand's going to open up all the bits of the cast iron. You go back with the oil. You heat it back up. You rub that oil back in there. You season that cast iron. And the more you do that without cooking it, the more you do that without cooking, the better that cast iron's going to perform for you. All right? Second thing, Matthew McConaughey, and this is the most important part, he's right. Number one, you let that steak sit on the countertop. You got to let it get up to room temperature. You do not want to cook a cold steak. You want to let that steak rest. Whenever you think you're ready to cook, you pull that steak out a solid 35, 45 minutes before you're ready to cook. You don't want to cook a cold steak because, as he pointed out, you got to let that muscle relax and open up a little bit. That's how you let that juice flow through the whole steak. Then, when you're ready to go on, you get that thing up to the right heat, you put that oil and immediately go in with the butter. That's the mistake I see a lot of people make. A lot of people put the oil, they let that oil get hot, 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 and then they put the butter. No, throw that butter in there with that oil. Let the oil and the butter work together. That way the butter doesn't brown. It doesn't burn. If that butter burns before you start to baste the steak in it, you're just throwing bad butter in your steak. You're going to ruin the steak. You want that butter still buttery, all right? So you go your oil and your butter right up front. As soon as that butter is melted, you put that steak on there and you go super hot temperature. You get that good sear on it. And once you've done that, While it's cooking on one side, you take that pan, you take a big spoon, and you just throw the butter and the oil up on top of the steak and just keep doing that. Once you get that sear on the bottom, flip that steak over. Let it sear on the other side. Once it's seared on the other side, same thing. Take that oil, take a spoon, throw it up on top of that steak. And then once it is seared, drop that temperature down and let that bad boy cook. All right? Now you gotta figure out what the right minutes, what the right temperature and minutes is for your stovetop, if you're going stovetop, if you can't go Big Green Egg, if you can't go grill, if you got to go with the cast iron, all right? You throw that up there, and you baste until that steak is done. Once that steak is done, and this is the hard part. This is the part that a lot of people screw up. A lot of people throw it on the plate, and they just dig in. No. You got to let it rest. However long it took you to cook it, 5, 6, 7 minutes, however long it took you to cook it, let it sit out for that same amount of time. Because once that muscle starts to relax again, after being tightened up from cooking, once it starts to relax, then all those juices and that butter, they start to redistribute themselves throughout that steak. All right? And that's what you need. Because otherwise, you're going to have some dry bites in there, and you're going to have some overly saturated bites in there. You want uniform liquidity throughout the whole steak. You want that juice distributed all the way through that steak. And if you don't let it rest, especially if you get that good sear on it, if you don't let it rest, you're going to have some bites that are super juicy, and you're going to have some bites that are really dry. It's just going to ruin it, because you're going to be alternating between mouthfeel of the steak from one side to the other, and you ain't about that life, all right? So let that steak rest for as long as you cooked it, then plate it, and by the time you get it plated, tabled, served, and cut into, now it's had time to let those juices get through the steak, to let that butter seep into all the right places. Bang, there's your good steak. There's your good steak. That's how you roll with it. Ladies and gentlemen, you're welcome. I'd like to thank Matthew McConaughey for being out here and fighting the good fight, trying to educate America on the best way to cook a steak. And by the way, even if you like your steak burnt, I mean well, even if you like your steak overcooked, I mean medium well, this is still the right way to cook it. Even if you're going to overcook your steak and cook all of that delicious pink and red out of the middle because you like a hockey puck more than you like good, good steak, this is still the right way to cook the steak. This is still going to make sure that you get everything distributed throughout the meat the right way. All right? This is Matthew McConaughey out here helping America be steak again. And I appreciate it. Let's see. Steven said, if you grill a steak, you're doing it wrong. Cast iron and finish in the stove. This is the way. And different strokes for different folks, Steven. Now, I agree with you. I will actually stovetop and oven a steak before I'll grill it. Now, I love a good grilled steak. But if you're going to grill it, again, part of the reason is it's harder to work on a grill. It's harder to work on a grill because you gotta trust that your grill's temperature gauge is right. You gotta trust the thermometer's right. You gotta trust that you're not on a hot spot or a cold spot on the grill. You gotta trust that it's uniform throughout. You gotta have your timing just right. You gotta be able to get that heat up to sear it and then drop back down. That's tougher to do on an open flame than it is with a stovetop. But if you can nail it on a grill, that's important. That's massively important. Texture said, let's see, cast iron is how you catch the plague bacteria, yo. No. Texture, what are you talking about? You clean the cast iron, but you season it. Then you put it away, put that lid on top when you put it away. When you come out, you bring that cast iron up to temperature. You heat that thing up to that 400 plus before you put anything on it. Come on, man. I've been eating off of cast iron since I was a baby. A wee lad, Rob. Do better. Texas said, great. Now I wish I had some steak for breakfast instead of this sliced Walmart deli meat. Thanks, Rob. You're welcome, corn chip. Do better with your life. I believe in you. Texas said, if you don't stop, I'm going to have you cuffed overnight, Rob. This isn't the bleeping panhandle. What?
Cuffed as in rested or hit in the back of the head?
Yeah, arrested.
Okay.
For what? For coming out here and trying to make America the best possible steak cooking place it can be? And by the way, you're wasting your text talking about the Tyson Paul fight. It's not happening.
Speaking of the best piece of meat in America, The first thing that's Xing is the sexiest man alive.
That's the best I've ever used the sound clip in my life. That was the one right
it was
there.
Really, it was really good timing.
John Krasinski named the sexiest man alive by People Magazine. Can I tell you right now, it is so weird seeing Jim Halpert from The Office 15 years ago named as America's sexiest man. But I got to tell you, I get it. I see it. Jim Halpert, a.k.a. John Krasinski, and the wife pointed this out to me when we talked about it last night.
You mean Mr. Fantastic from
I sure do.
That got shredded?
From Multiverse of Madness. I sure do. She pointed out that he is the perfect mix of like genuinely like traditionally attractive man who also very clearly has like a nerd side to him, right? Like he's not overtly like Chris Evans, just macho bro everywhere. Like there's clearly a nerdy, goofy, quiet side, but also he's shredded.
So ears, I get it. Ears don't matter in this stuff because his ears are like out there, dude. I mean,
did you watch
his younger days were not, but now his ears are.
No, they
there.
Always were.
It's just a hair covered.
Yeah.
Maybe. Okay.
Did you watch any of his Jack Reacher stuff?
No, I've heard it's pretty good though.
It's pretty good. B, a couple of scenes in there where he takes a shirt off and I'm like, God dang it, Jim. You can't have everything, Jim. You can't be cute and that hot. But he is. He does it both. It's
all right.
It's frustrating.
All we got to do is get a Hollywood trainer in here.
And, I'm telling you.
And you and I both could be like that.
I'm telling you. Any personal trainers out there looking to advertise your company on the radio, I'll take the services. All right? I'm just saying. Daddy wants a six-pack back. It's been like 20 years.
Yeah, I don't believe that ever happened. But
it did. In high school.
Okay.
I was shredded in high school. I played sports around the calendar. I was shredded. Yeah, then I went to college and I learned what beer was.
Yeah, me too, but I never had a six-pack. But I think some people are incapable of having that no matter how hard they work. All right, the next thing that's Xing is someone who also has a six-pack, Becky Lynch.
Becky Lynch. Is she coming back soon? I know that she was coming around the end of her contract with WWE.
Well, her contract's been up, I'm pretty sure.
That's what I thought.
Yeah,
so
and supposedly money comes into play because they only offered her like $2 million and some of the biggest stars get like 12 or something like that.
Yeah, regardless of how you feel about Becky Lynch, for like a solid 2 years, she was the biggest draw in women's professional wrestling. So I'm if they're lowballing her, I'm a little shocked, not because of her, but because if Becky gets ticked and leaves and she goes there, well, you know Tony Khan will give her that $12 million, Seth's following.
Well, I think the reason why she's exiting is because of a book that she wrote. I believe that's why. All right. And finally, the last thing that's Xing is Dungeons & Dragons.
You know, I saw it Xing earlier, but I saw it while we were in the air. I didn't get a chance to look. I'm assuming it's going to be like the 50th anniversary or something.
I believe there's a new manual. I think there's a new Dungeon Master manual.
I don't know if it's a new manual. I do know that, what is it, 5E?
Yeah, 5E.
5E Advanced or something is coming out. Which is good, because for me, as a Dungeon Master, Judge Away, IDGAF, I like when a new book comes out because it allows all of us who do this to start over on a new platform and a new foundation. And even though they've made some changes that I don't love, I'm interested to see what shakes out of it. Hey, that's how you end the show on a nerdy high. Thanks for being here. Hope you enjoyed it. Come back tomorrow, Thursday. You know how Thursday goes. It's going to be busy. We got Lulu Kessin, we got Rashad Beer, we got Hayden Ass Mario, we got Fight Club and more. Y'all have a great rest of your day. Don't drink and drive. I will punch you in the face. See you back here tomorrow to do it all over again on an even better edition of The Rob Brown Show right here on The Fan Upstate.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.